try to hear and hear the Spirit's word to you at this time and to the church. Jesus is talking and says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower, and he removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine and you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered and thrown into the fire and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in God's love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and so that your joy may be complete. Holy wisdom, holy word. So we usually don't have confession during our time in this church, but I'm going to make one right now. I've found myself over the last few weeks being a little bit despondent. Do you guys ever get despondent? Only Lauren. Okay, all the rest of you are just very self-actualized. I don't know why, but I just found like recently the COVID situation has really got me down. Right, I am feeling low, right? Like just when we thought things were getting back to normal, just when we thought we could move around the world with a little less anxiety, just when we thought we could do joyful things again, we sort of took a hard turn away from that course. And you know, thinking about homecoming today, I was thinking about, man, it really feels like we've been on this long and tiring journey. And we finally got back to our hometown, and we're in the cab, and we're driving toward our house, and all we can think about is sleeping in our own bed and eating in our own kitchen. And we see our house, and then the taxi cab just keeps going right on by. I mean, it really feels like, no, I wanted to go back there. I wanted to go back home. I wanted to go back to normal. Where are we going? And I find that I'm disappointed. And actually, I find that I'm pretty angry a lot of the time. I don't know if you all ever get angry. Probably not. But I can admit that. I'm angry, right? And I think anger is okay. I think anger is a functional emotion. I love David White says, anger is the deepest form of compassion for another, for the world, for the self, for a life, for the body, for all our ideals, all vulnerable and all possibly to be hurt. Anger is about what we wish to protect. And so I'm feeling that a lot recently. I feel like I'm angry on behalf of those people I know who are in fragile health and who now have to retreat into a further time of isolation and concern. I find that I'm angry on behalf of all my friends who are nurses and doctors who have spent the last 18 months on the front lines of a war, and who now feel their contributions are being cruelly disregarded by those who are not taking this seriously. And I gotta say, I'm a little bit angry on behalf of our kids who have to live perpetually in this limbo and who cannot just do normal kid stuff without this perpetual vigilance that seems too great a burden for their young years. I am angry. And as typically happens when we are angry, I have been looking around for someone to blame. Anybody else looking around for someone to blame? No, you guys are so, this is amazing. Maybe you're just already reached enlightenment. So I have been just thinking, who is to blame for this? I'm so pissed off. And I have to tell you, in the dark of night, unvaccinated people have been an easy target of my fury. I don't know if any of you have felt that. Like, here's a big group of people that are not only actually making it possible for these variants to be created, but then spreading them all around. And I felt like, man, I just cannot understand this. Like, I'm a pretty positive and I think a pretty empathetic person. And usually when someone has a really different thought or idea than me, I can kind of get with them on that. I can say, I see why you feel this way. In this circumstance, I just cannot. And that's hard for me. I especially can't understand how this idea comes from so many people and communities of faith that read the same Bible as me and sing the same hymns as me and yet come to a profoundly different conclusion. You know, because for me, getting vaccinated is sort of a natural outcome of my faith. And as just a little aside, in case this is useful to any of you, I'm going to make a very brief kind of Christian apology for vaccinations. How does that sound? And I would start by saying, I very much think that bodily autonomy is part of our tradition. I think we are able to choose what we do with our own bodies. And I think the language of rights is important. But I think the language of the church is not the language of rights. It's the language of responsibilities. And sometimes I feel as though recently we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about democracy, but not duty. We want to talk about choice, but not the consequences of those choices. And in my experience, when you are shaped by the way of Jesus over a lifetime, you begin to see the world and the needs of your neighbors in the frame that we call the rule of love. What is the most loving thing? And for me, that's about protecting others. If it involves a small risk to my body, then I choose that. That's connected and consistent with Christian theology throughout history. And to any who would say that prayer is a better protection than a vaccine, I would say, we don't say that David should not have picked up his slingshot against Goliath, but prayed instead. We don't believe Gideon should have put down his trumpet and said a prayer when he was facing the Midianites, that the boy who gave two fish at the feeding of 5,000 should have set them aside and said a prayer. God expects us to use all the tools that are available to us to bring well-being to ourselves and wholeness to our neighbors and to the world. And I think medicine is one such tool. And that it is foolish to put God to the test when God has given into our hands what we need to prevent tragedy. So that's my rant. And now you can see into my angry heart this month and week or whatever. And then, you know, I turn to the Gospel of John. You know, I'm always like, well, I got to find some good news in here. Can't just stop the sermon like I'm so angry. Well, good luck. And, you know, the first thing kind of got me, it's so repetitive, right? You're going to abide in me, and I abide in you, and I abide in my Father, and Father abides in me, and the love, and the love, and the abides, and share the love, because we're going to abide. I mean, it's just, come on, John. But maybe John knew that this was a message we might need to hear a few times before it really sank in about the abiding and the love part, right? And it actually reading it over and over throughout the weekend, thinking, what am I going to say about this? It has really started to do its work on me. And a question came to me. I hate this when the Spirit is like, here's a question, just saying. And the question that came to me reading this text was, is this anger that I have bearing any fruit? Now, I said, I think anger can be really productive in some circumstances, as long as it's expressed appropriately. It can be a sign of what's important to us. It can push us toward justice. It can clear our mind. But I have to say, when I put my own anger about the situation up against the test of that question, it didn't pass. It wasn't bearing any fruit. It wasn't spurring me to further action or helping me to understand something of myself. And I think if I'm honest about it, that what I was experiencing as anger was really just my own hurt and fatigue from this long season of uncertainty. And actually, then I realized that my anger actually betrayed a certain departure from the exact practice to which Jesus calls us in this section of the gospel, which is to see everything as being profoundly interconnected. Right? We are all branches of the same vine. Now, I think the pandemic, of course, has demonstrated that for us in certain ways. We share space, we share breath, we share resources, right? But in other ways, I think it has served to drive us even further apart from each other, and I had forgotten about that. It occurred to me that maybe we can't go home yet because we still have not integrated the lessons that this time has to teach us. You know, we still live in a system in which millions and millions of people don't have health care. And they don't trust that the care will have no cost to them, even if you tell them this will have no cost to you. We've set that up, and we're living with it now. We still live in a system which millions and millions and millions of workers have no sick leave, can't afford to take time off to things like tending to their health, getting vaccines. And we still live in a system that is characterized by massive economic inequality. It's getting wider all the time, the gap. And research shows that 77% of unvaccinated people live in households making less than $75,000 a year. And so as much as this is a problem of religious ideology, political identity, and false information, we have to confront that it's also a problem about equity. It is. It is a problem about equity. And I had forgotten that. Sometimes you forget things when you get really angry. I had forgotten that. I had forgotten to have compassion for that. I'd forgotten for a moment how to ask why it is that so many of my neighbors don't trust a medical system that may have mistreated them in the past. I'd forgotten to ask why it is that so many of my neighbors are just predisposed to living in fear rather than in confidence. You know, and this passage from John got me back to an original question, which I think is probably the most important question, which is, what does love require? What does love require? Have you ever thought about that? What does love require? Now, perhaps you're sitting here listening, you're like, I'm not angry at the vaccine people. I don't know what you're talking about. This whole thing isn't speaking to me. That's fine. But surely there are other places in your life where your connection to other people in a personal setting or a professional setting demands that you answer the difficult question of what does love require? What does love require us to do for ourselves? What does love require us to do for our neighbors and for our kids and for our church and for our country and for the earth, right? I think that's the question that is answered by Jesus' life and presented to us when we enter a journey of discipleship. What does love require? And some people would say that the answer is pretty easy, but I've never found that to be so. I think that question leads us into complexities and conflicts and various layers that challenge our minds and stretch our spirits. I think sometimes the answers aren't immediately clear. But I think asking the question at the outset grounds us in the task of abiding in God, right? Which is what Jesus asks us to do. What should we do, Jesus? Abide in me. Live in me, dwell with me, invite me into your hearts, root yourselves in me, and I will give you whatever you need. And maybe that's the only other thing we can do now, is to ground ourselves down, right, in prayer and in reflection. Ground ourselves in the assurance that we abide with God, and that because of that, we are actually always at home, even if we find ourselves in a place that is unfamiliar. I just want to give you some encouragement that if you are at a place in your life where you don't know or can't figure out what love requires, or if you're in a place where the future seems uncertain, if you're in a place where it seems like love is asking more of you than you think you can give, if you're not ready to move to curiosity or compassion, that is okay. God will sit with you in your despair as God has sat with me in mine so many times. But be prepared that when you're ready and when the time is right, God may offer you a question that might sit on your hearts. God may ask you something like, do you remember that you are part of a living vine? God might ask you, can you remember that you are not alone? And that the very thing that makes this whole human experience more difficult is actually also the very thing that makes it possible to be redeemed. And that is that we are all connected and that we are all one. God might ask, can you remember that you are nourished by the very God that created all that is? Can you believe that you are redeemed by the God incarnate in Jesus, who understood the trials of this human life and who knew much of disease and despair and who ultimately chose to give himself up, finding that this world was worthy of love, and wanting to show us that so much, stretched out his arms and said, "Abide in me. Do this for one another." Friends, I think God is with us in these difficult moments, that God will be with us in the days ahead, and that if we can root ourselves into that and abide in God, then we can find hope for a way forward. We can find justice for our neighbors, and we can find encouragement for our own journey. So I offer you that confession and that invitation that you might take them and that the Spirit might do what it wishes in your hearts this week. So I offer those words in the name of God, who created, redeemed, and sustained us always. Amen.